Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Random Chatter. This is episode number 141. We got a little bit different lineup for you tonight. We're going to keep things changing up. Well, no, actually, we're going to change things one more time, and then we're going to keep them the same, hopefully. So tonight with me we have Lizzie as normal. Lizzie, how are you?
What up? I'm doing great.
Awesome. See, don't you like that? Lizzie as normal. See, you're part
That's
of the regular crew
thing.
Now. You're not just the new person.
Yeah, but normal doesn't apply to me.
Well, okay, a regular host, then we'll say that, because none of us are really normal, I suppose.
Yeah.
At least my wife keeps telling me that. So the other regular host we're going to have on here from now on, Chris has stepped away from Random Chatter, and we're going to bring in Tim. So Tim, you were kind of ambushed by this. We kind of said, hey, Tim, you're on the show, and you went, okay. How are you, Tim?
What? Oh.
Yeah.
Lou, Liz, hey, how are you guys?
Like, you're here all the time now. Yeah, you're one of the gang.
Fancy meeting you here.
It's like I'm on record all the time now.
I know. You went from nothing to like 0 to 60 in 2 seconds.
It's crazy.
It's awesome because you fit in really well. So,
but Lou, you should clarify though. Chris has not stepped away from the network. Just the show.
Random Chatter. Yes. No, yeah. He's not stepped away from the network. He's still here with us. He's going to be on his show, Chasing Fandom. He is still doing Echo Base with you and I.
Podcast.
I'm still doing The Expanse with him and Cordcast as well, too. Yeah, so he's still very much involved in the network. He's just trying to minimize his time on some things and just maximize his time on other stuff. So stepping away from Random Chatter seemed like a good thing for him and gives you another chance to be on mic, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good time. And Liz and I and another host have a project coming up in the near future, which we'll talk about in a future episode.
Exactly.
But that ties in pretty well, I think, with her and I being together on Random Chatter and obviously here hanging out with you.
Yeah, I think it'll be some good synergies between the network we already have and stuff we want to start adding to it. So this is our first step of growing the network again. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Yay.
Thanks for joining us. Speaking of growing the network, we finally put out our new Patreon perks after, 2 months of talking about it.
The best kept secret ever. None of us knew. None of us.
Well,
this was Lou and Chris in like a back room somewhere making all the decisions.
They were in the room where it happened.
We had things on the board. We were throwing darts at the wall. nothing really. Yeah, no. We put some thought into it. We wanted to revamp our offerings and come up with a few different price points of along the way. So we'll just kind of run down what we have in a list here pretty quick. For $1 a month, we're keeping it the same. That's our Slack community and, of course, our ever eternal thanks for helping support the network. So beyond the $1 a month, we go up to our $5 a month, and that's going to give you basically the same as we had before, early show access and then bonus content. So after we're done recording, we do record some stuff occasionally, and we'll have some banter between us talking stuff that's totally off topic, or just, you know, anything we've been talking about is captured, and we can put that up as a show or a bonus content we have right on Patreon. So that'll be kind of fun. We haven't done a lot of that. We're, you know, still got our feet back underneath us here, but that's going to work out pretty well going forward. So we're looking forward to be able to give you guys that. When you go up to the $10 a month level, we're going to let you submit show ideas to us. So anybody in that $10 a month bracket can then submit a show idea to us once a month for any of the shows. And if we happen to use your topic, we're going to give you guys credit on the show. We're always looking for new good ideas for different topics for different shows, so it'd be great to have your input on that. The $15 a month level is new. It's going to be a monthly roundtable discussion. A lot of people that are listening to the show and a lot of people have written into us want to have a way to get written content out there and on randomchatter.com. So what we decided to do is put together a roundtable group where we can say, okay, this month the topic is whatever, space travel. And then you give us, you know, a sentence, a paragraph, a page. What we're going to do is all these topics that come back into us is formulate them into one article. So everybody's ideas, sentences, paragraphs, pages, put into one article and then post it to randomchatter.com as a cohesive document.
That's fun.
That's going to be a lot of fun, I think.
I can't wait to see.
And then I got to task all the hosts with, let's get a list of ideas we can throw out once a month. So that's where the rest of us come into play and kind of need your help. But that'll be fun. I can't wait to see what we get back from people on that one. For the $20 a month level, we are bringing back the monthly hangouts. These were always a lot of fun. They were a little hard to schedule sometimes, but I did love this concept, and I wanted to really bring it back because it's fun to hang out and chat with listeners and do a Google Hangout video. Not that we all have faces for video. We have faces for radio, but certainly we get together and chat about whatever the topic of the month is and kind of just freeform discussion, which is going to be kind of fun. Were either one of you involved in any of our hangouts in the past? I don't think so.
No, but I definitely have a face for radio.
We all do. That's why we do podcasting. non-video podcasting. But
no, I don't think I was involved in any of those. But yeah, it sounds like a good time. And now from the host perspective, I think it'd be a lot of fun. So do the Patreon contributors, do they get to pick their hosts that they want to hang out with? Or is this just like imposed on them and like
see, I think it's gonna be imposed on them, because if we let them pick and nobody picks me, I'm gonna feel very, very sad. I don't want to relive those high school days of, you know, not getting picked for the dance, and let's just not go there. No, it's gonna be kind of random, random chatter, but it'll let us, there may be one or two of us on a month, maybe three or four of us. Depends on who's available and what people's schedules are. We don't really have a set day for this yet. We're going to kind of get feedback from people that are in that group level to see what day works best for them, morning or evening, what kind of thing happens, and we'll schedule from there. And we might do a couple of them to make sure we get everybody involved. So it'll be at least once a month and at least one host on there each time. So
like a random chatter roulette.
There you go.
Lizzie just
came up with the best title ever.
Random chatter roulette. That sounds scary, but I like it.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get.
Oh, I'm flashing back to the chat roulette app. finally, our last level is going to be the $30 a month level, and that's where we're going to let up to three people add their voice to the Random Chatter Network. So what we'll do is set up a kind of like a hangout, but set up a separate show that we're going to do kind of freeform, very unstructured, very much just about you guys and what you want to talk about, and just a lot of fun. So we're not sure if it's going to be the same Random Chatter Network host each time, if we're going to rotate that around too, but we're still working out the kinks on that. But that'll be a lot of fun, and that'll be its own little show. So you'll be able to be part of a show itself on Random Chatter Network.
Ooh.
That's crazy. That's sheer insanity, Lou.
It is, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, it will be fun. It will be fun. I don't doubt that, but the Derek show? Really?
Oh, I wasn't even thinking about that.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Derek has once again been mentioned on a show.
He did, yes. And it's out there. I really can't take that back. I really put it out there on the show here, so I can't just...
Tim is naming names today. He is dropping it. Love it.
Well, shout out to the fans.
The sweetest sounds in anybody's ears is your own name, so that's always a good thing.
Exactly.
I don't know. I really like the word pizza. That's pizza? Sweet to my ears.
I love the word pizza. That's one of my favorite words.
See?
You're lucky I just had dinner, because I'd be really hungry if I hadn't. If I was holding off for after dinner, I'd be really upset about that. Well, let's get right into the show. Box office results, we're going to start covering those first off in the show here. I think that's pretty important. I do like covering the numbers. Being Sunday night, these are just estimated numbers for the weekend, so it's not the total of what it's going to be when they report it Monday morning. But Transformers 5 opened to a new franchise low. Yes. I loved it when I saw that headline. I was like, that's awesome. So Transformers the last night only brought in $45.3 million. I guess it opened on Wednesday, actually, so its five-day total is actually going to be $69 million for the 5 days. But $45 million is a low for the franchise itself, which I think is great, because it's his last movie doing it. And
Michael Bay?
Good fitting it, yeah. Good fitting ending.
Because they're doing more.
Yeah, but not with Michael Bay.
Oh.
At least that's what he said, because he said that before, I guess. But
yeah. Well, maybe there's some hope for the franchise after all.
Oh, let's hope. Cars 3 in its second week brought another $25 million in for $99.9 million total. Wonder Woman brought another $25 million in, and that brings her total up to $318 million. That movie is now the highest grossing of all the DCEU movies. And it's actually number three in all the DC comic book adaptations behind The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises.
That's awesome.
Woohoo!
It's just killer. I mean, it just proves they can make a good movie. I'm happy with this. I'm happy for DC. I'm happy that Wonder Woman's doing so well. I think it bodes well for the rest of the franchise.
And it really debunks that, like, female superheroes can't bank for studios. Like, that is dead. Get over that. Moving on.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, how could you not make bank with Wonder Woman? I mean, it's a huge name in comics. It's a huge name in heroes themselves.
Yeah.
They would have had to really work hard to make that not... do well. It wasn't a good movie, and it was a great movie. So
I mean, they killed Batman versus Superman, so you know what I mean.
Yeah, but she was the high point of the movie, I think, in my opinion.
Well, I know, but I'm saying, like, they didn't do well with some of their other characters, so it could have gone the other way. It not because of Wonder Woman, just because of the way the studio has been portraying it, I think. But, you know, we've already...
Well, that's true, too, but I think that Wonder Woman had the... You know, the hey, people that want to see a female action movie do well behind it, too. So it was good in that respect. But yeah.
We've been like waiting for that. So yeah, it's very exciting. I'm excited to see what comes out of it now that, like, crazily, studios have faith in females leading movies. You know, like, oh, what a thought.
Yeah, you know, and that's the whole thing. I hope they don't just kind of shove things into place based on this movie like they did with the whole Deadpool thing. Let's make R-rated movies now because Deadpool did so well. You got to make a good movie first. I don't care who's in it or what it's about, but make a good movie. So,
yes.
But hey, I'm also happy because it's part of my movie draft. So, yay for me.
selfish.
Definitely. Hey, I'm all about being selfish. rounding out the top five, we had 47 Meters Down. That brought another $7.4 million in for a total of 24. And All Eyes on Me at $5.8 million, rounding out just over $38 million for its take in 2 weeks. So, yeah, I mean, two top movies making some good bank for the weekend, but, you know, we'll see. Movie draft updates. Chris is at $532 million. Mike is at $502 million. I'm at number three at 424, and Eric is bringing up the rear at 321. You know, Mike's only 29.8 million behind Chris, but, you know, neither Mike or Chris have any movies coming out, so they're just kind of residuals going up. So they're both kind of locked into where they are. Me with only 108 million behind, I think I've got this, because I got Despicable Me 3 coming out this weekend.
Yeah, you do.
if it doesn't beat that in 1 weekend, 1 weekend might be a bit of a stretch because I don't know if it's going to do $100 million in a weekend. But
I'd be surprised if it did if you weren't like at least three quarters through that.
Yeah, I imagine I'll be probably pretty close. I don't know what the first movies did in their opening weekend. Let me just
To the Internets.
Yeah, let's see here. Despicable Me 2 did 368 total. Its opening weekend, it did. Where is it here? 83 million. So,
yeah,
I might be pretty close. We'll see.
Yeah. Double dose of Steve Carell is going to give it that extra boost, I think.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait just to see it myself. I think it's going to be a great movie, so I'm looking forward to that.
And to throw a little money to your pool.
Yeah, my $15 isn't going to be that big of an addition to it, but every little bit helps, right? So that's good. Well, speaking of Despicable Me 3, it is the big movie opening up this weekend. We have Despicable Me 3. We have The House. That's the comedy with Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler. I think they make a casino in their house to raise money for, I don't know if it's tuition or something, but yeah, it looks like it might be a...
Oh, yeah, that looked funny. Yeah,
it might be pretty good. I mean, I like those two together, so it might be pretty good. Baby Driver, action movie coming out this weekend. Ansel Elgort. I've never heard of him.
What? Oh, yeah. I'm pumped for this movie.
Really? Are you really?
Yes, I'm so pumped for
Come on.
Have you seen the trailer?
Yeah, the trailer looks okay.
Oh, I'm pumped.
The trailer looks good. This is this movie's interesting. It hasn't really gotten much media attention until 2 weeks ago, and all of a sudden it's all over the place.
It is. TV spots
it's
are
all
over the place.
You see. Yep. So they really did a solid last minute push, and now there's a lot of hype. And Kevin Spacey and John Hamm, I mean, that's two fantastic actors.
I don't know how much Kevin Spacey's in the movie, though. I think he's just his name's on the title, but I think he's just kind of a sub role here. He's not a main character.
Well, there's a lot of names in this one. Like, Jamie Foxx is in it. There's a whole bunch of, there's like a big, quite a big cast in it. So I just love, I love a good, like, heisty movie. And I don't know, I'm all about that. And Ansel is in, he's in Divergent. And he was also in The Fault in Our Stars. So I feel like he's going to pull in a lot of, like, younger millennials.
Yeah, and it's one of the only action movies coming out this weekend, too. I mean, Despicable Me 3 will be a kids movie and pull in some adults looking for a comedy. The House is not going to do, you know, huge numbers. Then you got the horror movie Amityville Horror coming out, Amityville Reawakening.
Yuck.
I don't think it's going to do very well. I mean, horror movies typically do pretty well the first weekend and then drop right off the face of the earth. So,
Are you guys Will Ferrell'd out?
No.
Really?
Never.
This stuff is so hit or miss with me, though. It's either really good or just, what were you thinking? You know, it's like, his movies don't do that much for me.
I love him.
I love Amy Poehler. I think she is fantastic and she's hilarious. Will Ferrell, it's just a lot of his stuff is too slapsticky and I can't do it. It's not as clever as I would hope it would be.
I mean, you know, like Anchorman was good. Anchorman 2, I didn't really, you know, big deal. Yeah, but yeah, his stuff is so hit or miss. It's either in your face slapstick that's like, yeah, okay, too much, or it's really well done.
I think when he settles into it and like Elf or like, I think Anchorman or Talladega Nights, like when he's really in his groove, he's just like, or like Cowbell or like whatever mm-hmm. skit or thing that he's in that he's throwing himself into and he's not trying to be Will Ferrell. It's like effortless to watch. I love it. I mean, but I love him in anything. It doesn't matter. Like once I'm on board, it takes a lot for me to not be on board with somebody. And Will Ferrell has been like from the beginning, I love him. So I love the two of them together. So I'm very mm-hmm. biased. I like to put out there that I'm biased. So it's not like I'm trying to say like, love Will Ferrell because I do, because I'm just 100% biased. Doesn't matter.
You can like what you like. There's no problem with that.
I know.
We all have our own opinions.
I just adore him, and I would marry him and have his babies if he wasn't married. 100%.
I loved him in SNL.
Yeah.
I thought his brand of comedy was perfect for SNL, for that format, for sketches. Worked really well in movies. I'm just not so enthralled with them.
Well, that's also kind of the SNL curse, though, isn't it? I mean, people do really well largely on SNL. The skits are awesome most of the time. And the movies are just like, wow. It's like, how do we go from this great skit to a horrible movie? And it's not the same case with every single one they do, but most SNL alum movies are just kind of,
It's because it works in a short form and then they're trying to play too hard to the thing that worked in a short form skit. And then you're trying to pull a whole story out of it. And I think with Ferrell for sure, again, I love him, but I think he is so hyper aware of why he's getting cast as these things or why they're being created for him. And it's because of that will. It's like Johnny Depp. It's like Johnny Depp gets this like sort of like same kooky whatever thing to the point where he becomes a caricature of himself mm-hmm. and he just mm-hmm. keeps playing the same thing. I will still, you know, I'll still watch Will Ferrell, even though he does sometimes seem like an exaggerated version of himself. But when he really settles, you can feel the difference when he really has settled in, like when he's in Wedding Crashers and he's just like being himself, but not to the like nth degree. Versus when he's in like Blazing, what's the ice skating one, is like, it's hard to watch. And there are moments when it's funny, but it's like, mm-hmm. like, just be you, like what we love about you, instead of trying to be who Will Ferrell is in quotes, you know? Mm. I don't know. It's tough because that's what the studios are creating for him. They know that that's like the thing. And so I don't know. It's tough. I feel like it's probably a tough thing to walk when you get to that, when you do something really well and then all of a sudden that's all you're doing.
Yeah, and I think some of this stuff is you got to be in the mood for it too.
Sure.
I mean, if I'm not in the mood for a over-the-top kind of silly comedy, I'm not going to be, you know, enthralled with the movie, so.
I'm never not in the mood for Elf. Elf is, like, always on the table for me.
But you're right, Lou. It's just like Jim Carrey or Adam Sandler. Yeah. It's a specific brand of comedy, and these guys have, I mean, largely they've typecast themselves, but mm-hmm. it's worked out successfully for them. But you have to, you have to be in a mood for that. Mm-hmm. And the movies, like those two guys, Jim Carrey, I know for some people, Jim Carrey really, really grates on people. I like some of his movies. And I have to be in a mood to watch those movies. Adam Sandler, I think, is hilarious. I like most of his movies, but still, again, I kind of have to be in a mood to watch them. I have to be in that right mood.
And both those guys, you're right. They are an acquired taste, but they're also, you know, some of the stuff hits, some of the stuff misses.
Mm-hmm.
Like Waterboy, I didn't care for at all. You know, it's like, okay. But other stuff he's done, I thought was fantastic. So It's really hit or miss with me on them, more so than a lot of other actors. In the comedy thing, it's either your kind of comedy or it's not. I mean, comedy is such a subjective thing. It's tough.
Yeah, and I think it's weird that, like, comedians sort of, like, as if you think back to Jerry Lewis, when, like, to go back, you know, like, it was the same for him. Like, his movies would be very much the same thing to a point where at the end of, you know, like, his main career, he was such a caricature of himself that that it's sometimes difficult to watch those later movies, especially when you see like the effortlessness of him being himself in the early ones. And I think it's such a, I think it's something you see in comedy more than a lot of other genres for some reason. I don't know. It's people just set in their grooves and then it's like, oh, that's the only thing that we're going to see from them mm-hmm. ever. Or it's the only thing that they get cast to do. Or the only thing that they think that they can do at some point, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that some of their films don't get the longevity that they do because of the other films that the same actor has done.
Right.
So, like, Happy Gilmore. I remember when Happy Gilmore first came out, probably the first three or four times that I watched that movie, I laughed so hard that I cried and I couldn't even breathe. Mm. That was one of the most hilarious movies in the world to me. Mm-hmm. Now, if it's on, I watch it. It gets a couple of chuckles from me, but that's about it, because I think we just saw so much of that same brand of comedy over and over from Adam Sandler. It was basically taking the same character and putting them into another movie.
Right.
And it just kind of wore me out on his stuff. And like I said, I generally like a lot of the movies that he does, but we do see a lot of that, you know, rinse and repeat.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it gets boring after
so
a while.
So funny. That being said, Will Ferrell, I'm in.
Okay.
I don't care.
Fair enough.
Well, we'll see what it does in the theater this weekend, so.
Yeah.
What other movies besides Despicable Me 3 do you have?
In the movie draft?
Yeah.
Nothing else coming. The only two movies left in movie draft coming out are Despicable Me 3 and Amityville that are left to come
June,
out.
It's just June, right?
Yeah, because we run it out in the end of June is when this one runs out. My other movies in my draft, let's see, I had Smurfs The Lost Village, I had The Circle, I had Wonder Woman, A Rough Night, and 47 Meters Down. And Despicable Me 3. So that was my take on it.
And so we're going to be doing a new movie draft here in pretty short order,
yes,
right?
Yes, we are. We're trying to get our date set up between now and next weekend because that'll be the last weekend before the new movies get released for the summer draft. And that'll be for July, August, and September. Trying to get as many of the hosts from different shows on here as possible. We can get Jay on here and the two of you and Chris. And
yeah.
So we'll try to get as many people as possible on here. I'm trying to get a good list going. I want to get, and because I'm winning the last one, I'm going to be the moderator and auctioneer for the new one coming up. So I'm trying to do all my homework so I know what's out there, what movies are coming up, I can describe them and talk about them and get you guys hyped up and overbidding on stuff that shouldn't be bid on. I mean, what? No, I would never do that to you guys. I would never try to steal it somewhere or other.
I need my movie draft 101 tutorial.
Hey, you know, if this goes the way it's supposed to be, you look at the first two-time winner. So stick with me, kid. I'll help you out.
Calling it ahead of time.
Yeah. See, that's what I think I got this one in the bag. So we'll see what happens.
But. I think you do too. I do. You agree.
It's a good time. It's very easy to do. Lou will explain the rules at the beginning of the show for not only for our benefit, because I know I'll certainly need a reminder. But also for the listeners so they can kind of figure out what's going on and why we're doing what we're doing.
Is there a way for the listeners to make their own movie draft?
There is. We always do the audience participation thing where once we've all bid on the movies and they're all listed out there for what they were taken for, the audience members have the same 100 credits that we had and they can buy whatever movies for the amount they were bid on in one to get yourself most, you know, closely to 100 points and see what you can get out of your list. So in our current audience players, right now, Chris Brooks is way in the lead now at 729 million. So,
oh, very good.
Yeah. So they have the benefit of looking at what's out there, what we bid on the movies, what they think is a good or a bad bid. Whereas, you know, when we're bidding, we don't know what movie's coming up next. So it's always a kind of a risk of, well, do you put all your money in this one or do you wait for that one to come up? And then somebody else waited too, and now you don't have enough money to buy all the movies you wanted to get. So it's always a fun time for us. So it's a good time to make up your own list too for the listeners.
Here's my prediction.
Yeah.
Jay is going to walk away with it.
Jay has not been in one of our movie drafts yet. He was going to be in the first one, the inaugural one that I won, and he had internet problems that night and couldn't be there. So I can kind of attribute my win to him not being there because he would have given me my money. So
yeah. Yeah, he actually has, if for those of you who listen to Random Chatter interviews, Jay was one of our early interviews, and he talked about his background in film and film studies and critiquing films. So I think Jay is going to walk away, but I think he's going to do it. And Lizzie, I mean, as far as you and I are concerned, you're going down.
A little inter-show rivalry here.
Bring it on, Tim, who wanted to go see Baywatch. How'd that do, bro?
Let's see. Baywatch made a whole $56 million. Tim, that would not have been a good choice.
Come at me, Tim.
Hey, I never said Baywatch would have been a good choice for the movie draft. I just said it would have been a fun movie to go see. And by the way, I still have yet to see it. So
I am using your personal judgment against you.
That's fine.
Wow.
That's fine.
Come at me.
Okay, well, let's get into our news. George R. R. Martin, he wrote a novella back in 87 called Night Flyers. Either one of you know about that?
I am not familiar with it, but I got to say, reading the synopsis that you put up here, it sounds very intriguing.
Yeah. Shall I read it?
Please do.
Night Flyers is set in the future on the eve of Earth's destruction and follows a crew of explorers on the most advanced ship in the galaxy, the Night Flyer, to intercept a mysterious alien spacecraft that might hold the key to their survival. As the crew nears their destination, they discover that the ship's artificial intelligence and never-seen captain may be steering them into deadly and unspeakable horrors deep in the dark reaches of space.
Ooh.
I got it at the end. I got it back.
You did get it back.
You redeemed yourself.
You rallied.
Okay, good.
So basically, nice, Laura bringing this up is because Sci-Fi has picked up the pilot of this one.
Awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't know if it's going to be a limited series or how long it's going to run for, but I kind of like the sound of this. I mean, I didn't read the novella. I think I might before the show comes out just to kind of get the idea of what's going on. But sounds cool. You know, it sounds like a little bit of horror going on, a little sci-fi.
Oh, it actually does.
Very perfect for Sci-Fi Network. Like, I think it sounds great for that.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I think they can team up.
So this is the first of the new orders. We don't have anything else listed from them yet, but this bodes well. I'm looking forward to seeing this. This will be good.
Yes, and it has the behemoth of the George R. R. Martin name behind it. So
exactly. That doesn't hurt.
No.
August 18th, Marvel's Defenders will be coming to Netflix. This will be the team up of all of our Netflix show heroes so far. So we'll have Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist.
I am so jazzed for this.
Which I am still behind on. I'm not caught up with all
of
those.
You better get caught up.
I know. You know, there's so much stuff I got to watch, but I definitely got to watch that. I've seen all of Daredevil season one. I've watched most of Jessica Jones.
Luke.
I know.
Most?
Yeah.
Luke. I'll tell you, Iron Fist got a bad rap, and I really don't understand why. I think Iron Fist was one of the best series out of all of them that were put out.
Really? Because everything I've seen online is the contrary.
It was a very compelling story. My wife felt the same way. She really enjoyed it.
I thought it was a little slow start for me, and then once I got into it, I was digging it. But I mean, definitely not more than Daredevil or Jessica Jones. Okay. And Luke Cage, like, I felt started off really well, started fast, got a little slow, but then picked it up in the end. But Daredevil and Jessica Jones, for me, 100%.
Yeah.
Are my favorites. Yeah. But I am so
jazzed. Well, I got my work cut out for me. So before August 18th comes around, I will have to binge watch the rest of that stuff on Netflix.
I mean, you don't have a choice. Like, you must.
Okay.
Like, go in your room and never leave.
I'll catch up.
I'm pumped.
I should have done that this weekend instead of catching up on movies that I had in my hard drive that I wanted to watch for a long time and never did and was disappointed by most of them. But
priorities, Lou. Priorities.
I know. Sorry.
Get it together.
Let's see. This is a movie I definitely want to see. Pitch Perfect 3 trailer hit the airwaves this past weekend. Did you guys get a chance to check out the trailer? No. What? Eh? What?
No.
I love Pitch Perfect. I love the whole series. I love Anna Kendrick. Okay.
I'm there with you.
Yeah, I just felt like the trailer looked, I don't know, like they're hitting the same, like, oh, Fat Amy's Fat note, and like, oh, go everything. Like, I don't know.
Well, by this point, they kind of have to. It's the same movie. It's just in a different setting.
I know. But that's what I think is unnecessary. Like, that's the part that I think it was so fresh when it came out. And then even two was already one repeated. I don't need it repeated a third time. I want to see a fresh take on it.
Well, they have said this is the last one. So they're closing out the series, which I think is good. I mean, as much as I like the Pitch Perfect concept and I like acapella music, which I think does, you know, help out this story.
Lou just likes Anna Kendrick.
Well, that too.
Valid.
I mean, I'm not going to say no to that, but
respect.
It's a fun movie. It's a fun time to go see it. I mean, I'd be happy if it was the same thing again. I mean, I'm not saying I want to see, you know, Pitch Perfect 10.
Well, Fast and Furious, you know, it'll be like they. But don't you think that they will? Like, once they think that Hailee Steinfeld will be the next Anna Kendrick in the series, that they're going to spin it off on her and that it'll be Pitch Perfect 4.
I hope not.
Or I think 100% that they will. I especially hope Hailee.
I mean, I wasn't even expecting a Pitch Perfect 3. I was happy with 1 and 2. Like you said, I didn't need to see another rehashing of the same thing. I mean, I'll go see it. But yeah, if it was Pitch Perfect 4, 5, and 6, I don't think I'd go see those.
As soon as Pitch 2 did as well as it did, of course they're going to make a third one. I think the thing is that Anna Kendrick is not going to sign on for more because she's looking to do other projects because she's done these other things that she wants to do. So I don't see her continuing on in the series. Mm-hmm. But I see Hailee Steinfeld 100% taking over and, like, spinning off.
Holy crap, you guys are still talking about this.
I don't think I'd see her doing that.
Wake up!
Tim.
Wake up to Pitch Perfect 8.
This is getting way more airtime than it's worth.
Listen, look at what they've done with Fast and Furious, and look at what they've done with even Step Up, which isn't a musical genre, and look what they've done with Transformers. There's no way they're not going to do it with Pitch if it succeeds again. It's just, this is what studios do.
No, I don't think they will. I think they're done. I think that's all they're going to do.
And we'll see.
I don't think Hailee would do more. I mean, I think she wants to do more movies that are different. I don't think this is what she wants to be in.
We'll see how much money she makes from it, and then we'll see where her priorities are, is all I'm saying.
That's true. If someone pays me a lot of money, I'll do Pitch Perfect 4.
You know what I mean? Yes. I would pay to see that.
No, you wouldn't really.
Lou in Pitch Perfect 4.
No, you really wouldn't pay to see that.
I would.
I would not get that in my movie draft.
I would. No, I'm going to put it in my movie draft.
Hey, Tim. Tim.
No offense,
Tim, Lou. Next time we're doing karaoke.
I love karaoke.
That should have been Celebration karaoke. We didn't do that.
That would have been amazing. All right, well, you have to come back for another con. That's the story.
Damn, and I have to come back for another Celebration. Okay, fine.
Or just a Disney extravaganza with Lizzie.
There we go. That sounds like fun. There was a story I saw yesterday. I didn't get to read the whole detail of it, though. There was a veteran has spent the last 5 years going to Disney every day. Did you see the story of that? Wow. It was like 500. No. I forget what it was. It was 5 years, 2,500 days in a row or something like that.
That's a lot.
It was bizarre. I was like, that is so interesting. I mean, it's like, who would do that? And what? Okay.
But, I mean, I go a lot, but every day? I mean.
That's a lot.
I love Disney, but that's a lot. I wonder if it would lose its magic after that, and I would never want that.
I bet it would after a couple of days in a row. But anyway, back onto our story. Now, talking about sequels, like that smooth transition there.
I rolled my eyes at this one.
What?
I'm going to yawn.
Avatar? You guys going to roll your eyes and yawn at Avatar? The highest grossing movie of all time?
Listen, who wants 4 sequels?
Come on now.
I'm sorry. Like, I'll take one. I don't need 4 sequels. 4.
I don't need 4 sequels 11 years later.
Yeah, like 4 sequels.
I respect Avatar for what it was.
Yeah, I do too.
It was not a bad movie. I enjoyed the movie.
I don't think it deserves to have the number one ranking worldwide. Dollar-wise.
I thought it was overrated.
No, I love Avatar. I think it's I thought it was great for what it was. It was made for 3D. I don't think it works well outside of that. I mean, I think watching it on TV is like,
yeah, it's definitely the same thing. But I mean, think of it this way, though. I mean, Avatar itself, for what it was, to take out the whole special effects thing and take out the whole, you know, what
it's Pocahontas.
Right. It was derivative of a lot of other movies, and it wasn't special at all, besides the special effects. So now we're going to go back there 4 more times. The reason we're talking about this is the production for the movies is starting up this September. They're doing all 4 movies concurrently, and they're starting release dates in 2020.
I just can't. I just cannot. Like, I'm pumped for Avatar Land. I think it's going to be amazing. It's, like, the most I want to be a part of Avatar for the rest of my life is like, at a Disney park. Or watch the movie maybe one more
time. Yeah, I mean, it'll be good to see it in a park format. And I'll go see Avatar 2.
The majority, these are gonna be competing with Star Wars. Goodbye.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean,
like, enough of you. You're out. You're done.
I mean, I think we're all on the same page because none of us really think we need 4 sequels. But now,
if it was Avatar 2 and they put their entire, like, James Cameron at his best behind it, I'm on board. I'd love to see, like, a great sequel to a Pocahontas story. obviously Disney didn't do one. You know, so I would be on board for that. I think it's a beautiful land that I would love to see on screen again. I really liked my 3D movie experience with Avatar, and it's got a really good place in my heart. And I have a special place for Avatar, but I don't have place for four sequels at Christmas time competing with Star Wars. Guess Who's Getting My Money? End of story. Mic drop. Like, get over yourself.
Well, I think maybe Star Wars went back to the May release schedule because they're afraid of Avatar.
Oh, they shouldn't. They should hold on tight.
I was saying that tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, dear God. I was about to say, there's no way.
I just don't know what they're going to do when, I mean, obviously Avatar made bank at the box office. It's not the number one domestic movie anymore. Force Awakens beat that, but it's number one worldwide. It's like $2.7 billion, right, or something like that.
Which is why Disney bought it for the parks, by the way.
Right. But now, what are they going to do when Avatar 2, coming out in 2020, does, you know, so at the box office? It's not going to do what the first one did. Not even close. I mean...
Well, no. Yeah, because the thing about the first one, when it was the first movie that was filmed exclusively to be shown in 3D, so a lot of people went to see it in 3D. But now, everything's in 3D. Nobody gives a crap. They're not going to be like, oh, made for 3D. Everything is. Like, get over yourself. What are they going to do?
I mean,
what's going to be their thing?
I mean, they had some special effects, which were amazing. But you're right. The story's not there. It's not going to be this... you know, all-encompassing story that we're all going to go, oh my God, it's amazing storytelling.
I mean, maybe it is. Who knows? We don't know what the story is, but I'm just saying, like, I think the 3D thing and the special effects thing played a huge role.
Oh, yeah.
And now, this is, like, so many years later. We've come so far.
I know.
So what's the
thing
that's
2009? Was that the first one?
I don't even know. 100 years ago. Who knows?
I think the first sequel is going to do reasonably well.
Yeah, agree.
With a lot of people kind of having their hopes up and hoping that this is something great like the first one. Unfortunately, I mean, unless they somehow wow us with an outstanding story, I am kind of inclined to think that it's going to fall flat. The second sequel is definitely not going to do very well, if that's the particular case. And I think it is, there's a lot of cojones to be scheduling out four sequels to 2025.
Well, I want to know what they're going to do if the first one doesn't do well, or, you know, well, the first movie itself did 760 at the box office domestically. If this next one does half that, I think it would be an amazing feat.
Sure.
So, you know, call it $380 million for the second one.
But they're doing concurrent production of all four of these films.
Right.
They are blowing a lot
That's
of money.
What I'm saying is that now you get the second one coming out a year later, the third one, I should say, a year later. Maybe that one's going to tank even worse. I think 380 is a pie in the sky thing for number two. If these movies don't do well, and then they got 3 years between number two and number four, which I don't know why they're waiting 3 years for that.
Jump?
That's bizarre.
What is this jump?
Right.
So, yeah, especially if they're doing it concurrently. It doesn't seem to make sense.
I would think you go 2020, 21, 22, 23. But no,
they get this
3-year jump. And I think it's, you know, like you said, it's a big risk to do that. I think they're barking up the wrong tree.
It was a big risk for Lord of the Rings, too, because they did the same thing, as did The Hobbit. The Hobbit didn't pan out so well.
Yeah, right. I mean, but committing to Lord of the Rings the way they did, they wanted to tell the whole story. So they committed to it and did it.
Yes.
And it was perfectly done.
It was. And Hobbit got made because Lord of the Rings did so well.
Right.
Well, Hobbit was a hatchet job. And it was this whole thing of like, oh, let's turn one thing into three things because money.
Right,
like,
right.
Enough of you.
Exactly. But, you know, each one of the Hobbit movies did, you know, over 250.
Oh, yeah, sure.
They were still financially
successful. You know,
Yeah, but it was just because it was like a December release and it was playing in nostalgia. I mean, whatever, we can go into Hobbit, whatever. I have very strong feelings about that. We're talking about Avatar. Right. Here's the thing.
I don't think Avatar's going to do the dollars a Hobbit did.
No.
No.
No way.
No, it doesn't have the place in people's hearts that Hobbit does.
The first sequel, maybe. After that, no. I think it's going to drop.
Yeah.
Didn't the second and third Matrix movies, weren't they also filmed concurrently?
I believe they were, yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Two and three, yeah. Oh,
okay. Well, I mean, we could go on a tangent on... We should do a whole sequels episode. We could really get into some sequels, Jack.
We do talk about that quite a bit here on the show.
You too. Well, we kind of have to because it's all everybody ever does. the thing, I want Avatar to be good. I want it to be something I want to see. I just think it's one thing for Marvel to like come out with a 10-year plan with all these characters and all these movies and diversity and really building towards something. Like, I don't see that in Avatar, and I don't see the point in having this crazy 3-year gap that you're going to bank on people being so invested in 21 that they're going to come back in 24. Like, that's a huge leap.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. I mean, I think if the powers that be are getting behind this and it falters, I don't think we're going to see 4 and 5.
I don't know with them filming concurrently, really.
Yeah, but, you know, you don't have to finish it. You can film it. You don't have to do all the post-production and do all the rest of it to do it.
You can have a really deep fan base. So, I mean, I don't see them not releasing, but I just don't see them doing well.
Well, they have a deep fan base now because of what the first one did, but that was
right
11 years ago when this is going to come out.
Well,
and it's just not going to have the same.
I think we have to factor in the Disney factor of the park because that's going to spark some new interest in Avatar. So I don't think we should discount that. But look, even that, we're talking about 3 years after the open of the park. What they should have done was this should have been their year to launch. I mean, right. Dear God, yeah. James Cameron had plenty of time.
Yeah, no, this should have been, they should release the movie in conjunction with the park.
If they released it this year.
I'm also interested to see how well the park's going to do.
Oh, it's, from what I've heard, it's amazing. Everybody who's been is just raving about it, and I can't wait to go. But a big summer release after the park, you know, do it concurrently with a little Disney promotion, and bam, you have a really good summer hit.
Well, and like you said, summer hit.
Yeah, don't compete with Star Wars. Like, stop it.
Yeah, I think all four films will release. Because it's going to come down to a matter if these do tank, it's going to come down to cost recovery, and I think they're going to try to get as much as they can out of it. That said, if things go south really bad, the last two sequels could go straight to home video, or whatever the equivalent.
Yeah, I mean,
is going to be in 2024 and 2025. For beaming stuff into our heads.
But, for those who don't know what home video is, see, back in the day, there was this thing called VCRs.
Yeah, Tim, you're showing your age.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Still call it a record, too, don't you?
I think it may be limited theatrical releases.
We'll see.
I mean, I guess it would be tough to think that anything that had James Cameron's name attached to it wouldn't go to a theater.
Yeah.
But maybe a limited theatrical release. And then after that, Blu-ray, streaming, whatever the case may be. Obviously, we are doing a lot of speculation based upon our speculation, anticipating that this is going to crap out. And so then what are they going to do? But I can't help to think that's the direction that it went. And I didn't hate the first Avatar movie. I just wasn't.
No, I didn't either. I just didn't have a need for another one. I didn't think. I thought it was fine.
Zero people had a need for another one.
Yeah.
Zero.
And if there was going to be another one, they should have done it sooner.
Like today.
There's no reason to wait.
Well, I mean, 2009 to even now seems a bit late. Now we're going to do it 2 years later from now. It's like, okay. Or 3 years later from now. Yeah. Well, anyway, speaking of sequels and movies that add on to franchises, our discussion topic for the week, as well as our what were they thinking, we're going to combine the two together, is the whole Han Solo Star Wars director debacle.
Dun, dun, dun.
I assume you guys heard about this, right?
Who's Han Solo?
He was a guy
in a movie back in the 70s. Didn't do very well. You know, nobody really knows him.
It's back in the time of video.
That's right. I got a VHS tape up in the attic with it on, I think, somewhere. So Han Solo movie, in production now, had its directors fired. And I guess there was some creative differences between the studio and the directors and where things were going. And they're no longer the directors of the movie, and they have now hired Ron Howard to direct the movie. What makes this hard thing to imagine is they were two-thirds of the way or three-quarters of the way through principal photography, all the pre-production stuff, and now you get rid of your director and bring somebody else in to finish up the last 3 weeks of shooting, presumably all the reshoots, and still get the movie out on time in May of 2018.
That's a heck of a commitment.
Isn't it?
That's a heck of a commitment to change. Look, obviously these guys were canned for a reason. And as you, Lou and Chris spoke about in the last Echo Base, which I missed, you know, we don't know what those reasons are, and we may never know what those reasons are, but obviously something went wrong. Something went seriously south with this, and these guys were not meeting the expectations of Kathleen Kennedy and the rest of the production team from Lucasfilm. It's, you know, some people are saying that Ron Howard came into this fully aware of what was needed, and it seems on the surface that he has committed to the same delivery date that has originally been stated and that Kathleen Kennedy reinforced this past week. I just don't know. I mean, if all of this happened truly just in this past week, and I'm not completely sure that it has, again, on Echo Base, you guys speculated that this could have gone back a couple weeks even. Because it seems an awfully quick turnaround. I mean, and we know, obviously, Kathleen Kennedy has worked with Ron Howard in some capacity, particularly through their relationships with Steven Spielberg and that kind of stuff. And so I'm sure she can pick up the phone and say, "Hey, Ronnie, how are you? I got a thing and I need some help."
What you doing?
But, you know, for him to just, you know, within 2 days after these other directors were canned, quit, whatever the real story is, for him to just say, "Yeah, sure, why not? I got nothing going on right now."
Right.
First of all, Ron Howard does not possibly not have something going on. He has to. He's Ron Howard. He's a phenomenal director.
Arrested Development season 5.
Yeah, I mean, he's busy doing TV. He's busy doing movies. He's doing a lot of things.
Yeah, but Ron is a fan. He's a Star Wars fan at his heart. You know, when you read his tweets about it,
right,
like, he loves Star Wars. So, like, when you're given the chance, you jump. Anybody would jump. And so he's no different than all of us fanboys and girls who would kill to be a part of a Star Wars something, you know?
Yeah, so I'm sure it wasn't a hard decision for him to say, "Yes, I'll help you out with this." But
yeah, who knows what the timeline is like? What I think what bugs me is, like, I don't want to know all of this. I don't want there to be. I'm pumped for a Han Solo movie. So jazzed for it. I don't want to know all of the, like, behind.
There's one.
I was going to say, you're like the only one I've heard say that.
What?
That you're pumped for this movie.
I'm jazzed.
Nobody
I
know
I
wants
it
to see this.
I love the cast. I love the idea of it. I don't care. It's Star Wars, and I'm going to see it, and I'm going to love it, and I love Ron Howard, and I don't care, and I don't want to know all the behind the scenes. I just want to see the movie, but it's like you physically can't do that anymore without knowing everything behind the scenes.
And yet you're on a podcast that talks about a lot of the behind the scenes stuff, so okay.
I know, and to a certain degree, like,
well,
like, it's fine, but, like, there are some things that I'm just like, can we just enjoy movies anymore, you know, without knowing every detail? Oh, this guy walked off. I don't care. Did he act in the movie? Great. Show me what he did.
Well, yeah,
I don't care.
Okay. If it was the guy who was in charge of, you know, putting the tape on the floor that says where you got to stand, he walked away. Okay, fine. I don't need to know that. But when the directors are
the
asked
directors,
to leave
yeah.
the movie and, we're, yeah, and we have 3 weeks left in principal photography shooting, and now you've got stuff
not
in
anymore.
The can that is maybe unusable. We don't know. You know, some of the rumors were that they were going off script a little bit and wanted to ad lib, and they didn't like that. Kasdan and Kennedy didn't like that concept, so they, you know, gave him a chance to correct it and didn't change. So you're gone. I mean, that's one of the rumors. We don't know if that's true or not, but I just don't know how you recover in a movie where you're still going to put it out on time. You bring a new director in that's going to hopefully bring it back onto your vision of what the movie's going to be and do it all. I mean, I don't know how much we're going to reshoot. Can you use the footage they already have? Do you need to reshoot everything? Are you going to be, you know, how extensive the reshoots going to be? I mean, there was a lot of concern over Rogue One in the quote unquote extensive reshoots they had to do.
But then look what happened.
It was great.
Right. So I think back in the day, all of these kinds of things used to happen all the time with movies. And now they're like funny trivia quizzes in the like pre-movie slideshow. They're like, oh, did you know that the director of blah, blah, blah walked off the set? Oh, who knew? You know, like now it's like, let's know a year before the movie comes out and have everybody like pan it before you even have a chance to see a trailer and get pumped for it. I think that it takes something away to know all of this. I don't think that we can, it's not going to change. We can't go backwards. Where are we? We are in social media, and I love social media, and we are where we are in news. But I think that like this sort of like, we don't know anything. We don't know why. We don't know. So like, who knows? We don't even know what's, you know what I mean? Like, I think, mm-hmm. Personally, I trust Kathleen Kennedy's vision and her direction because of what's come before already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like if she's got a vision and a director's not getting on board with that, I understand she's got to make a hard decision because she's handling the biggest brand in our world, the most beloved brand. So she has to take baby steps and like really, you know, and so like, I just think like put your faith in the entity until it proves that that's not working anymore. Fine. Like if Kathleen Kennedy's just like turning out horrible Star Wars movies, then we got to reevaluate. But like, I don't know. There's something about, I've been ignoring this Twitter like maelstrom because it's pissing me off. Like, I don't want to know. I'm so excited for this movie. I don't want like everybody. I'm over you. I want to see it. Stop it.
You know, it's kind of funny you mentioned some of that stuff, though, because sometimes, and I think we've seen this a lot in the past, whenever a studio meddles in the production of a movie too much, it's usually a bad thing. Now, I'm not saying that's the case with Kathleen Kennedy and crew at Lucasfilm, because I think they're doing the right things. But, you know, we talked about this a few weeks back on Echo Base. It was that, you know, how much of this is giving the director the ability to do their own thing, or how much of it is micromanaging them to say, this is what you're going to do and that's all you're going to do. Where's the creative outlet for the director then? How much direction do they really have if they can't make their own decisions?
I mean, yeah, I think it's a twofold. Yes. You want each film to have its own breath and its own, you know, if you're looking at Force Awakens and then you're looking at Rogue One, they're each Star Wars, but they each have their own breath and mm-hmm. they're each have their own tone. But you know, Kathleen and everybody at Lucasfilms and everybody protecting Star Wars, they've been with it for so long, and who knows it better than them at this point, other than like, you know, deep, deep fanboys and fangirls who could probably, you know, be like, no, you shouldn't do that. But, you know, who knows it better than them and is charged with protecting it? I just think like a director coming in. Yeah, they were hired for a reason. So it's, you know, like to try to speculate, like the reason for me is like, oh my God, no, I just want to see the movie. Mm. I just want to see it. I want to enjoy it. And all of this gets in the way for me. And it's the same when like we know all the stuff about an actor on a TV show. And then it's like, I just want to enjoy the thing that you do, your life's work, acting or directing. I want to enjoy that thing. I don't want to know about your personal life.
And sometimes this stuff does get in the way of enjoying that. I will agree with you to a certain extent. But
sure.
You know, for this discussion, I mean, from Ron Howard's point of view now, how much pressure is there on this guy? I mean, obviously he's done some great stuff. But you're coming into a production that's already been started. The cast know each other. The crew have been working together for months. Some of them may be resentful that the old directors had to leave. You're coming in now tasked with saving this movie and making a good Star Wars movie. I mean, how much pressure is on Ron Howard right now?
I think if it was anyone but Ron Howard, then maybe it'd be a different discussion. But he's such a seasoned actor, seasoned director. Like, he's been in this business forever, since he was literally a child.
Right.
And, you know, like, I'm sure there's pressure for him, but how much is it going to affect his work? This is what he does. The entire business of Hollywood is pressure. That's the point.
Tim, what's your take on this?
Oh, I think he's absolutely pressured. I mean, this is he does have a ton of great experience, and I don't think he's like going crazy over this. But yeah, this is still a big deal. This is still a Star Wars film. This is still taking over a project this late into the project. There's a lot to do. there's a lot for him to look at. There's a lot for him to consider. The producers are already kind of ticked off and aggravated, and they're looking for him to rescue this. And I'm confident that he will. I'm absolutely confident that he will. He will deliver because he's a professional.
Right.
I hate to trample on the professionalism of the outbound directors because we don't completely know the story. But to be honest, I mean, if the story is true that they basically did not follow the instructions of the studio and of the producers, that's pretty crappy. And that shows a lack of professionalism. Whether or not they thought that they could do something better is kind of beside the point.
Mm.
You know, there comes a point that, sure, you know, you can argue your position and you can try to convey your vision. But if the boss says no, then the answer is no.
Right.
And if they refuse to correct things that they were doing that the producers didn't like, well, I mean, that's the end result. I mean, just like any employee, they get fired. So I'm confident Ron Howard can do it.
Yeah, I think he can 100%. Too. I think so too. And I think it's different if you were a director like Ron Howard doing things that maybe your boss didn't tell you to do versus, you know, Lord and Miller, who don't have the same track record of a Ron Howard.
I think what have they directed? Too. I actually don't know them very well.
The Lego Movie is their big one.
Yeah.
Which is a great movie.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Loved it. Loved it. I thought it was incredibly unique, and obviously it set the stage for every other Lego movie that has followed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, a situation where this whole director switch up didn't work. I mean, if we're talking about Hobbit, you know, Peter Jackson had to come in at the last minute, and I think it suffered because it wasn't his baby to begin with. And look at the care he took with Lord of the Rings versus The Hobbit, you can feel a difference. And so in that case, the switch up of the director situation really did not work.
Right.
For me. I mean, a lot of people liked it, so whatever. But I think it can go either way. And I think the Ron Howard name means something to not only Hollywood, but to all of us.
Yeah. The last thing that makes part of this discussion interesting to me is there was an article on, I think it was Hollywood Reporter, that talked about who's going to get the director credit for this movie. Mm. And I didn't realize this, but I guess it's really up to the Directors Guild of America as to who gets that credit.
I wonder if it's like how much of the movie that you have under your belt, or I guess I wonder at what point when you're coming on to it,
mm-hmm.
do they consider you to have the most control over it? Is it, I mean, because pre-production plays a huge role in direction. So right.
And these guys have been working on it for the last 2 years, so it's not like they're brand new to this. But
right.
I guess the way they've worked it in the past is if a director pulls out of a movie and takes his name off of it, I guess the Directors of America lists the director as Alan Smith with two E's on the end, which is bizarre. I've never heard that before. I'm like, okay, so this guy Alan Smith
directorial
credit for the movie. They Alan. Don't like to give multiple credits for movies. They don't like to give it to more than one name. So there's highly unusual they would do that. Unlikely that chance will be taken for this one.
Unless it'd be three names, right?
Yeah, exactly. But and not to say what they're going to do, but I mean, they're probably not going to give it to Ron Howard. I would think they, you know, because how much, I guess it depends on how much the film they use versus what was shot later, and a whole bunch of stuff's got to go on. But
that's tough because of, again, coming back to his name. Like, how much does Ron Howard want to be on this film and not have his name on it at all?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think Ron Howard needs to have name recognition for stuff. I mean, you know, he's a fan of the Star Wars franchise. If his name wasn't attached to it, I don't think he'd be heartbroken. But yeah, I think everybody wants to get a name out there if they can.
But as a director, getting to do Star Wars is a huge deal. And as a fan, I'm not saying it's the point, but I just like, how much does he not?
But then again, if he's worried about maybe not getting it perfect, maybe I don't want my name attached to it.
I don't think he's worried about that at all. I think there may be pressure, but I don't think he's worried about not performing his job well.
Never know. Maybe he goes home and cries every night now. He's like, oh my God, what do they do?
Oh, I know.
What do they get myself involved in? No.
I think every Star Wars director has that moment, though, when they're like, okay.
Yeah, it's right after they go, yes, I got the movie. And they go, oh no, I got the movie. Now what do I do? Right,
there's no way JJ wasn't just like day drinking at some point when he realized like his life.
I love it.
Like, well, he said he didn't want to do Star Wars because you're such a fan of it. And now you have Ron Howard's a fan of it too, so who knows? But
right, so it's like your baby. It's like, oh.
So I'll be interested to see when this comes around as to who gets the credit for this movie. Because I don't know how they're going to make that work out, but I guess they don't really want to use more than one name. And to see Phil Lord, Christopher Miller, and Ron Howard attached to the director might be a little weird.
All the directors.
And there's a question of, you know, are Lord and Miller going to get invited to the premiere? Who gets the residuals? Who gets the payouts? There's a lot of stuff going on that we'll probably never know about, but I thought it was a pretty interesting article. If you head over to Hollywood Reporter and check that out, it'd be kind of cool, cool read. So,
you know what? I want to see it, and I don't care. That's my take.
That's your take.
The article is really quite interesting, and the possibilities are fairly convoluted. I mean, we just don't know where it could go. I think the big indicator is going to be in the end when the movie finishes, who we see as director.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see what they do.
I just want to see it. I just want to see it.
Got to wait a few months.
Don't want to wait.
More than a few months. 11 months.
Like a year. Yeah.
Not quite a year. No, let's not go that far.
Almost a year. Closer to a year than a few months.
That's true. I guess that brings us to the end of our episode, unless you guys have anything else you want to add in at the last minute.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
I'm optimistically cautious.
I will see it because it's a Star Wars movie, and I feel like I'm never going to miss a Star Wars movie, but I don't think we need the movie, so I'm cautiously pessimistic, I guess.
Lou!
What?
Come on, Lou.
I've said this since a long time ago. I don't think we need a Han Solo movie. I don't think we need a Boba Fett movie.
Thought I knew you, Lou. Just kidding.
Well, on that note, if anybody has anything they want to send to us or tell us we did wrong or right, send us an email. You can do it by sending us an email to randomchatter@randomchatter.com. That's the best way to get a hold of us. And if it's not to me and it comes in, I'll make sure whoever gets it gets it. So please pass those along.
You can also find us online at Facebook.com/RandomChatterNetwork and also on Twitter at Random Chatter. And individually, you can find me at Nerd in the City. Lou?
You can find me at my name. It's at Lou Secchi. That's LOUSECKI.
You can find me on Twitter at Qui-Gon Tim. That's Tim with two M's. You can find all of our shows on RandomChatter.com. Take a look at what we have on there. There are all sorts of shows, both within the Random Chatter feed proper, as well as other things like Echo Base, another show that I'm on, so you should definitely listen to it. We have, you know, music shows. We have shows on TV. We have shows on all sorts of things, long-form interview. We have new shows coming up on sci-fi and on other things, which we're not going to talk about just yet.
You can leave your reviews on iTunes or Stitcher plus both. All of them, whatever. And don't forget to tell your friends about them. And if you don't have friends, you should make them and then tell them about Random Chatter.
Patreon. I'm not going to go into a big thing about Patreon because we spent like the front part of this episode talking about Patreon.
We did.
All the new perks. And you want those perks, people. You want them. I mean, bare minimum, you want to get into Slack, which is just such a great time all the time. That's just $1 a month. So patreon.com/randomchatter, that gives you all the details on all the stuff that Lou talked about up front, all the different levels, what's available to you, how to donate, very quick, very easy. The Patreon, what the contributions are actually very important to us. They help us with internet hosting fees, even email addresses. I mean, I run my own business, and I'll tell you, having email addresses costs money, and it's kind of a stupid amount for it, but you know, it's a necessary thing, as well as all of our storage, our data storage fees for making sure that we can keep, you know, legacy shows available for you to download. So that's why Patreon is important to us.
Oh, that's what it means to keep the lights on.
Yes.
Well, it's new light bulbs too, because I need new light bulbs occasionally, so you got to get those. Well, thank you, Tim. Thank you, Liz. It was great to have you guys on the show. Thanks, Tim, for joining us full time now as over Random Chatter. I'm happy you're here.
Woo-hoo.
High five.
I'm happy to be here.
Ooh.
Thanks, guys.
Are you guys together?
No.
I think she just slapped me, though.
I high-fived you.
I slapped across the face.
I high-fived you. Okay. Do you not know how high-fives work?
We're getting an infographic for the next episode showing what a high-five is. Until next week, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.